Well, I don't know about you, but I have a dream. Not a big, spectacular dream, but a dream of being able to get up in the morning and feel confident that I can cope with the day ahead. I have a dream where I can go into any meeting or event and feel calm. I'd like to have a life where I would go to sleep every night not regretting what I've done during the day. I dream about being able to sleep through the night without waking up at 2 o'clock in the morning in a panic because I regret something that I have done or I'm scared about what is to come. I'd love to be able to go to Heathrow Airport and get on a plane without considering what I need to do if it crashes. But I want to be honest with you. I'm not living the dream. My life is not a life that is so confident and calm. If you were hoping to come this evening in person or online and meet someone that had life so sorted that they never struggled with anxiety, then I am sorry, you are going to be deeply, deeply disappointed. But I am someone who knows a little bit about what it is like not just to struggle with anxiety or to walk alongside those who struggle with anxiety, but someone that knows what it's like to see that anxiety reduce and to have had the privilege of counselling and just being friends with others who have seen their anxiety reduce too. My reality is still that sometimes I worry. Sometimes I get scared. I still don't want to get on a plane. In some ways, lockdown has worked in my favour. But I do know much more confidence and trust than I've ever known before. And I'd love to share a little of that with you tonight. I'm hoping I'm not the only one that struggles with anxiety. Well, on one level, I'm not hoping. It would be lovely if nobody here struggled with anxiety, but I'm guessing that's not the reality. Before the pandemic hit, statistics would suggest that about 1 in 6 of us would be struggling with anxiety at some point in our lives. At the height of lockdown, up to 66% of us were saying we had felt anxious in the previous 2 weeks. What's happened over the last 18 months has taken what was already a slowly increasing struggle with anxiety in Britain today and hurtled it into overdrive. I've barely met anyone over the last 18 months who hasn't been anxious in some way. But what is anxiety and what does it do to us? Well, anxiety at its core is basically a fear, but it's not a good kind of fear. Some fear is brilliant. You know, if you see the number 68 bus hurtling towards you at speed, it's right to have a good sense of fear that enables you to jump out of its way. That's a useful fear. It galvanizes you to do what you need to do, to be safe, to keep going. But anxiety is, well, quite frankly, a pretty useless kind of fear. It's the kind of fear that comes too early. We're anxious about something way in advance of it actually happening. Or a kind of fear that has an object that, well, it might not happen, but it might. And so we're fearful of what could be rather than what is. We're worried that someone might not like us, that we might not be able to cope, that if we said that kind of thing, that maybe the implication will be this, that maybe, maybe, just maybe, it's not going to be okay. And it's the maybes that keep us awake. It's the maybes that bring all kinds of different struggles into our hearts. Anxiety has its roots in 3 different areas. It has its roots in what comes at us, the hard things that we all have to experience, maybe hard things from the past like bullying or abuse or rejection in some way. Hard things in the present, like having to endure a pandemic, financial pressures, relationship loss, maybe hard things about the future. Worried about exams or jobs or relationships or looking after elderly parents. The things that could happen. Stuff that comes at us fuels our anxiety a great deal. But it's also fueled by what's happening inside us. That's partly our biochemistry, our hormones, our neurotransmitters. They can play a part. Some of us will be more genetically predisposed to anxiety than others. Some of us will have had lives where we've just been surrounded by anxious people at home, and we've learnt how to be anxious by observing key people in our lives. But anxiety also comes out of us. There are things that sometimes we want that just aren't good for us. We want life to be perfect, and therefore we pursue perfectionism, but it's unattainable in this life. And so it always leaves us worried. We pursue being the best at something, and whilst I'm not knocking at shooting for the stars, if we're only satisfied if we're number one in every aspect of our life, then we're only ever going to be disappointed. It's an unattainable goal. And we'll push ourselves, but only end up missing our mark. When those things combine, what's coming at us, what's going on inside us, what's coming out of us, then anxiety can take a desperately difficult toll. Many of us will know the physical symptoms, the sweaty palms, the palpitations, the glorious gastrointestinal distress, that neck muscle that just won't ease, the headaches, the inability to sleep, or maybe the inability to wake up. But it's not just our physical being that gets affected. It's our emotions too. We can feel overwhelmed, just want to cry the whole time. It feels like the whole world is bearing down on us like a fast-moving train from which there is no escape. The weight on our shoulders can feel unimaginably heavy. It feels like there's nowhere to turn. And that impacts our relationships. Sometimes we want to run away from people. People just feel too scary, too hard. We want to withdraw. We want to hide. The duvet maybe feels like the only safe place. For others of us, maybe we go to the other extreme. We want other people to make it better. We become irritable and grouchy. We expect other people to serve our needs and make our anxiety go away. It can put a strain on relationships, on friendships, on marriages, as we experience that tussle, that push and pull towards other people, as we withdraw, but then want them to come and help. And it can make us ask big questions about life too. You know, is there a God that's looking after this world? Is there any point? Is there any help? Is there any hope from anywhere? Or are we just stuck in anxiety with nowhere to go? Well, there are plenty of ways we can help our anxiety. We can take some exercise. We can eat healthily. We can prioritize our to-do lists. We can breathe deeply. You've probably seen it on Google, breathing from the diaphragm rather than breathing from the top. Actually slowing down our breathing, going deeper, it can actually have a wonderful physiological effect, calming us. They are grounding techniques for when we feel panicky. Just simply touching our finger against our thumb can tell our body to come back to the present and stop spiraling into the future. We can do other things like looking around the room, finding 5 things we can see, 4 things we can hear, 3 things we can touch, 2 things we can smell, 1 thing we can taste. Little techniques that can help us to be a bit calmer. We can rest. We can remind ourselves that actually we don't have to be perfect. And of course we can avoid all those other little traps that anxiety sometimes nudges us towards. We can be people who don't run to just a little drink, who don't run to a bit of retail therapy that knocks us into debt. People that don't run to gambling or drugs or to porn or whatever kind of numbs us in the moment. Avoiding those things will help our anxiety no end. And if we go onto any search engine, we'll be able to find lots of different ways, lots of different techniques that will help us to be calm. But is there anything more? Does the God of the Bible have anything to say to anxious people like us? Well, one of the wonderful things about the Bible is it's realistic about how life can be hard. It talks about our world being broken, fallen, A world that is not as it should be. A world that is messy and difficult and painful. A world that is not as God originally made it. And so it's realistic that things like anxiety happen. And it talks about Bible characters who struggle with fear, like this great king in the Old Testament called David. It's realistic that some of the big Christian heroes, like Paul, who wrote loads of the letters in the Bible, struggle with anxiety himself. It's realistic about the fact that Jesus, the night before he died, wept and sweated blood. So scared was he about what was to come. But more than that, it speaks directly to people like you and I and helps us tease out some wonderful truths in the middle of pain, worry, and fear. You see, if you're anything like me, when you are anxious, a whole host of things go through your mind. You sit there thinking, I'm all alone. Nobody gets me. There's no one that's coming to help. Maybe you sit there thinking, everything's out of control. It feels like my life is absolutely spiraling. Maybe you sit there at 3 o'clock in the morning and just go, I can't do this. I am utterly unequipped to get through what the next day holds. Maybe you sit there struggling with guilt, thinking that everything that has happened is all your fault and everyone's going to hate you and there is no hope. Maybe you become inert and you think, well, this is all my life is ever going to be. There's nothing better than this for me. According to the Bible, none of those things are true. It's completely understandable that in the small hours when life is hard, we think those things. There's no judgment coming from me on that. I've been there. I've done it. I've thought those thoughts. But the God of the Bible has something precious to say to each of those five things. When we're sitting there thinking, I'm all alone, no one understands me, no one cares, there is a God who says, I'm here. I'm with you. There's a song in the songbook in the middle of the Bible, written many hundreds of years ago, that talks about you can't go from the east or the west or the heights or the depths to get away from God. If you want to look up the songbook, it is Psalm 139. And it talks about the presence of God and how intimately he knows each and every one of us. It's not like some scary cosmic surveillance system. He's not just sitting up in heaven noting what we're doing. This is a God who is genuinely with people. People that he made, people that he loves, people that he cares about. This is the God that knows the hairs on your head, knows exactly how many there are, who knows what's happening to the pigeon that just walked past the door a few seconds ago. This is a God who is present and a God who is inviting each and every person into a relationship with him, a relationship of intimacy, a relationship where actually he can come and live inside us and be that close. So there is never a moment where we're away from him. Does that make the pain of life go away? Well, no, it doesn't. But it does mean that whatever we're going through, we know beyond any shadow of doubt that we're not going through it alone. We're going through it with the one who knows us best, who loves us best, who has the most power to navigate this complex thing called life. And when we sit there thinking life is all spiraling out of control, this present God, this loving God, this intimate God says to us, it's okay. It's not out of control. It is not spiraling. It might be mysterious. It might be painful. You might not have it under your control. But I've got it. I've got it under my control. And you can trust me. There's a figure in the early part of the Bible, the very first book, called Joseph. And he was a man whose life looked profoundly out of control. His relationship with his family was so bad that his brothers thought about murdering him, but eventually just trafficked him into slavery. He was trafficked to a foreign land. He was sold as a slave. He was employed by somebody who was not of upright moral character. He was thrown into prison for a crime he didn't commit. He languished in prison. And whilst he made a couple of friends, when one of them got released and was in a position to help him, he just got forgotten about. He was left there in prison until one day he was called to stand before the most powerful person in the land and do a task that felt impossible, and was subsequently given a job to navigate an entire nation through a massive famine relief problem. Talk about anxiety inducing. Not sure I would have slept for years. And I'm not for a moment suggesting that Joseph enjoyed any of that. It was wrong, so wrong, what happened to him. And much of it would have confused him deeply. But at the end of the story, he's able to look his brothers in the eye and say, what you intended for evil, God intended for good. Amongst all the chaos of his life, over all of the pain, God had a plan that knitted it all together to make sense of it. We don't have to be alone. Life isn't spiraling out of control. And we're not unequipped. We have a God who provides for those who follow him. In another part of the Bible, just a little bit after Joseph, we find God's people wandering in a desert. And they are so grumpy because they are hungry and they are tired. And they don't know enough about what the future holds. And they think that God isn't looking after them, and they complain and complain and complain. And God says, it's okay, you're not going to starve to death. Each day I'm going to provide you with the food that you need. And he does. Each day, on a Monday, they get the food they need. And then on the Tuesday, they get the food they need. And on the Wednesday, they get the food they need. And so it goes on. God didn't give them whatever the equivalent was of an Asda shop all those hundreds of years ago. That'll set you up for the next few months. Just live off that. Now, here's a God that says, just keep coming to me each day and I'll provide. Trust me. I'm not going to let you down. He does that for those who follow him today as well. Provides what we need for the moment. I don't have what I need for next Friday, but I do have what I need for now. And I can trust him to keep giving me what I need to follow him. When I'm sitting there racked with guilt, thinking this is all my fault, I can remember that there is a God who's given a wonderful invitation to come to him to be clean. Oh, all of us, when we look in the mirror, we can think of things that we thought and said and done of which we are ashamed. There isn't a single human being alive that can't think of something. But we have a God that says, come to me. That mess, I'll clean it up. It's the whole reason why Jesus came to earth in the first place, to die, to rise again, so that he can take our dirt and we can have his cleanliness. We don't have to feel guilty anymore. Sometimes people think of Christianity as a faith that burdens people, that motivates people by guilt. It's a guilt removal faith. One that says to people, come to me and I will make you clean. There's no need to lie awake at 2 o'clock in the morning thinking I am guilty. Come to me and know beyond any shadow of doubt at 2 o'clock in the morning that you are free and you are clean. And after that, he invites us all to go on a journey with him, a journey of change, a journey where he promises to take each and every life and mold it into something more beautiful than it is now. I don't know where you live, but near where I live, there are some rundown houses. And it's easy to walk past them and to think, oh, what a mess. And it's easy to think that if there is a God, he might be looking down on our lives and thinking, oh, what a mess. I don't know about you, I like some of those shows with gardens or houses where you take something run down and it gets transformed into something beautiful. You know, the curtains get renewed, that the new wallpaper, that the glass gets mended, that the floor gets relaid. It's a fixer-upper. And you see, you have these interior designers, these builders that can look at these houses and go, wow, what a fixer-upper. And that is how God looks at us. Not, oh my goodness, what a mess. But wow, see the potential in her. See the potential in him. They are going to be beautiful once I've finished working in them. I've known that God for 32 years now. And he hasn't finished fixing me up yet. There are moments when I still struggle with anxiety, moments when the depression still kicks in, moments when I still lie awake in the mornings worrying about the day ahead, moments when I still think about some of my addictions past. I'm not work who's been finished. I'm a work in progress. But as it says in part of the Bible, one of the letters that that man called Paul, who struggled with anxiety, wrote, it says, he, God, who began a good work in us, will bring it to completion. He's going to take each of us on a journey until one day, for those who are following him, there's no more anxiety, no more fear, no more bad stuff coming at us, no more weird stuff happening inside us, no more unhelpful desires coming out of us, just perfection. And true and lasting peace. If you're wrestling with anxiety this evening, please know you are normal. This is what life is like in an anxious world. But please also know you don't have to go through it alone. There is a God who loves you. A God who has invited you to turn to him in trust. A God who has things under control. A God who is leading. A God who is forgiving. A God who is willing to change you and lead you somewhere perfect. And to do that with others like me who struggle along the way. Maybe I'll leave a moment of quiet for you to have a ponder about how you'd like to respond to that. Before I do, I guess it's worth saying that God doesn't promise to take our anxiety away in the next week or in the next month. But I have known a glorious reduction in my anxiety. And I'd encourage you to explore that. And even if your anxiety doesn't get massively smaller, you have the privilege of walking through it with somebody so loving, so powerful, so beautiful that it's possible to persevere. Why not take a moment of quiet? And if you want to text in a question, please do.
Helen, thank you very, very much. Thank you for being so real with us. Thank you for raising some really big and important ideas with us. And I guess it will have raised lots of questions, conversations we want to have. So let's just take a couple of minutes now to carry on writing down any questions. Feel free to keep the questions as real as you would like to. Ask Helen anything about anxiety, depression, anything she said, anything about the hope that she's spoken of from the Bible. So talk amongst yourselves if that's helpful to prompt questions. Carry on, put the music back on for a couple of minutes.